Hey guys, Mike here for Hokie Hangover on behalf of the good folks over at Main Street Pharmacy. Former Downtown Blacksburg Business of the Year in 2019, Jeremy Counts and his staff at Main Street Pharmacy have you covered for all of your pharmaceutical needs. Medication, school supplies, you name it, Jeremy and his staff, family-owned business, they got you covered over at Main Street Pharmacy in downtown Blacksburg. They've been a sponsor of our podcast since the beginning, going on 5 years now, and there's a reason why. Extremely reliable. They're good people. They're friends of ours, friends of the podcast. Head on over to Main Street Pharmacy, 301 South Main Street, downtown Blacksburg. Open Monday to Friday, 9 to 6, Saturday from 9 to noon. They're closed on Sundays. You can be reached at 540-605-7721. That's Main Street Pharmacy, 301 South Main Street in downtown Blacksburg.
Hokie Hangover is proud to be sponsored by Homefield, the premium collegiate apparel brand in the United States. Based in Indianapolis, Homefield is committed to creating comfortable and officially licensed apparel featuring vintage college designs. Homefield puts in extra reps for each of the more than 150 colleges they highlight, discovering unique logos, mascots, and iconic moments to create the best look at your tailgate. Go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code BEAMERBALL to get 15% off your first order. Homefield makes online shopping so easy, even I can't screw it up. Again, use the promo code BEAMERBALL to get 15% off your first order and acquire blue chip apparel from Homefield, an official sponsor of Hokie Hangover.
Hey guys, Mike here on behalf of our podcast partner, Vivid Seats. That's right. Hokie Hangover Podcast is partnering with Vivid Seats this football season to provide you with all of your ticketing needs. Heading to a game at Lane Stadium this fall, need tickets? Check out Vivid Seats. Going to another college football venue this fall? Use Vivid Seats. Checking out a concert venue even? Vivid Seats has you covered there as well. And they got a promo code just for you. That's right. Go to vividseats.com. Use the promo code BEAMERBALL20 at checkout for $20 off your first order of $200 or more. Again, use the promo code BEAMERBALL20 at checkout for $20 off your first order of $200 or more. We can't thank Vivid Seats enough for their partnership this football season. Make sure to check them out. Hokie Hangover, Virginia Tech's men's basketball team is in a hell game with Richmond as we sit here recording this podcast. They're in the second half. It's like a 2-point game. They just went to commercial. Ricky and Andrew are with me. We're going to be breaking down the women because they're still playing. And then we're going to be talking about the men's basketball season. Regardless of whether or not Virginia Tech wins or loses this NIT game tonight, this season has fallen short of expectations, which I think reasonably speaking, going into the year, we were all hoping for an NCAA tournament appearance. Didn't happen. So I think it's fair to say that Virginia Tech fell short of expectations. Guys, what's going on?
I've got a crumble cookie, which is pretty lit. Shout out to my girlfriend for that. Yeah, you mentioned it, Mike. While everyone likes to poop on UVA for putting together what was
they should. No. Listen. Ricky. I also had the UVA game on tonight. They have 14 points at halftime and didn't score in 9.5 minutes going into the half. I will continue to crap on UVA, and
that's fine. And that's fine. I just at least be cognizant of the fact that we are in a hell game with Richmond.
Yes, that's fair, which I am. I'm well aware.
Yes. But no, it is quite nice to see UVA, which should not have made the tournament anyway, go in there and what looks like laying an egg in a play-in game. So couldn't happen to a better program. But regardless, they made the tournament, even if they shouldn't have, and we didn't. So we're going to discuss that tonight. For sure.
Yeah. I mean, good to be back on the pod here. It's been a crazy 2 months for me. Last 60 days, I've been Well, initially, I started off by following the PGA Tour's West Coast Swing, went out to San Diego, then the Waste Management Phoenix Open, who, if any of you saw any of the news clippings related to that event this year, was an interesting experience, to say the least. Then some work trips to Kansas City. I had a chance to go to Duke, Carolina at Cameron with my dad, which is a bucket list experience for sure, despite Duke falling short in that one. For those of you who have been listening for a long time now, I do have a little bit of affinity towards Duke. But ultimately, I've mostly just missed the opportunity to say how much Virginia Tech was killing it on the women's side, pretty much during the beginning of my, you know, mid-January through February stretch. And on the men's side, not so much. And I think that's not only reflected by the fact that Tech is playing Richmond in a NIT barn burner right now, but by the looks of Castle Coliseum, the energy in the room far from touches on the last NIT game that I have ever attended, which was Virginia Tech versus Princeton in Buzz Williams' second year, which was an absolutely electric atmosphere. But I suppose that is the, you could call it the difference between a program on the rise versus a program in decline. You could call it a change in program expectations, which would be well warranted after what we've seen over the course of the last half decade plus with Virginia Tech. But either way, yeah, just not a super captivating season. And I speak, you know, for myself, and I speak for my many friends that I have who mostly run in Virginia Tech circles and, you know, are men who like sports. Tech hoops just didn't move the needle this year. And I think the general atmosphere in the fan base would reflect that.
Yeah. Castle is less than half full tonight for this NIT game, whereas Virginia Tech's women's team is hosting an NCAA tournament game, two actually, right, for the second straight year. And tickets sold out for that in less than 10 minutes. Now, obviously, you're talking about an NCAA tournament versus an NIT, but you're also talking about women's basketball versus men's basketball, right? And call it what it is. Women's basketball, while on the upswing, is not as popular nationally, right, as men's basketball. There is a electricity around the fan base right now talking about the women's basketball program, as there should be. With
Can
what
you
Kenny
imagine
Brooks
the
has
electricity
built.
If Liz was healthy?
Yeah. I mean, this was the Final Four team last year, had similar expectations this year. And, you know, we talked about in the last podcast with Liz getting hurt. I guess we can just start there. Kenny Brooks was asked going, you know, right after a selection show on Sunday, Virginia Tech's playing Marshall at 3:30 Eastern time on Friday in the round of 64 in the NCAA tournament. That game will be played in Blacksburg at Castle Coliseum. Virginia Tech ended up in USC's region. USC is a one seed. They're really good. Virginia Tech, if Kittley's not healthy, they probably won't even need to worry about that. Just calling it what it is. But Kenny Brooks was asked by Mark Berman of the Roanoke Times whether or not Liz was healthy and kind of what her status was, which I think, you know, Berman catches a lot of crap, but I think it was a fair question because you really haven't heard much of anything. And Kenny basically said she's going to test it out this week. If she didn't have a professional future, they probably would have given it a go in the ACC tournament. If he's being truthful about that, that's probably a good sign that it was not season ending. But I, you know, some of this is coach speak too. You can't give away too much going into the NCAA tournament. We know that her knee was pretty hurt, right, by that play at the end of the UVA game to end the regular season. But she's almost 3 weeks removed from that. If there's any hope that she can play, suit up at all, even give Virginia Tech 65-70% of a normal Liz Kittley, I think that would obviously be a boon to the offense, given the fact that Georgia Amor can't do it all herself. And that's kind of what we saw in the ACC tournament when Virginia Tech fell short against Notre Dame in the semifinal.
And they barely beat Miami in the first game they played, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is something we discussed last year, if you guys remember this, the fact that this is a team that relies heavily on its top two players.
Georgia and Liz, the entire offense runs through both of them. This team, especially this year, did not get quite the role player production that they were hoping to get. And it just kind of put even more pressure on Georgia and Liz, but they were more than up to the task, right? And both of them had tremendous seasons. And depending on where you look, Liz is either a first or second team All-American. Georgia's like a second or third team All-American, depending on where you look. Both of them were tremendous this year. And I'm really hoping that Liz will get a serious look at the next level. I'm not really sure what the draft prospects are for her at the WNBA level, but regardless, I kind of had a feeling that Liz's injury was not quite as serious after we went a few days without an update. Generally, in those situations where it's kind of we're going to play it by ear, you're not going to get any official word from the program. If they were going to be prepared to give an update early on, I would have had a lot less optimism, because usually those are the updates where, hey, yeah, it's the worst case scenario. Regardless, I'm not gonna expect Liz Kittley to play in the NCAA tournament. I certainly would not expect her to play in the first round against Marshall. If Virginia Tech wins against Marshall, which even without Liz, I think they should, maybe against Baylor in the second round, you might see Liz. But I would not expect to see her against Marshall. Regardless, though, like I said, I think Virginia Tech should still win that game, considering they're going to be at home. Georgia healthy. They've got enough talent on the roster. I think they can get it done.
I mean, yeah, absolutely no surprise that a team who, you know, not only run through Liz Kittley, right, but has been running through Liz Kittley for the better part of the last three seasons, all of which she won ACC Player of the Year. Like, kind of hard to turn that around in a week. So,
yeah, that's, I mean, it's tough. It's, you're asking Clara Strack, a true freshman who has played well this year off the bench. You're now asking her to take over, maybe not Liz Kittley's production, but a lot of Liz Kittley's minutes. And you're asking a bunch of freshmen to grow up really quickly in what's less than a week. I mean, they lost Liz Kittley that Sunday against UVA, and then all of a sudden you got to play Friday. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah. I mean, but to that very point, right? Like, you're not asking her to replace Liz Kittley's production, but in a sense, like, you actually are.
Right.
If you're sitting here expecting the same team results, and I think that there was a overly optimistic part of me and the fan base at large that was like, oh, maybe Georgia can just go bananas and we'll win a few games. But we saw that in the second half against Virginia, against Miami, Georgia was going bananas, and what that amount to, a loss and a very, very narrow win. So things getting out of control the way that they did against Notre Dame, a very good team who had just beaten Virginia Tech with Liz Kittley before she got hurt.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago. No, not terribly surprising that for a young team, plus Amor's got to be exhausted.
It's a bad matchup for her anyway. Mike brought up a really good point after the original Notre Dame loss that Hidalgo is just not a good matchup for Georgia Amor.
Just in general.
So if you take Liz away and you put Georgia in that position anyway, that's going to be a bad look. And we saw that, right? Like, they couldn't defend Notre Dame, but they sure as heck couldn't find a consistent offensive rhythm either.
It is funny. Like, that Notre Dame-Virginia Tech game was on the day leading into the Duke-Carolina game. So I was watching it with my dad at a bar in Durham. And he knew a bunch of players on both Notre Dame and Virginia Tech on the women's side. And I'm thinking to myself, there's no way this random 63-year-old man who's a huge enthusiast of basketball, would know as many players in the men's version of this game, which is taking place on the same day, which right. I think speaks to the negative seasons that both those programs had on the men's side, but I think it also speaks to the growth of women's basketball as a whole, especially in ACC country.
Yeah, you can look at both independently, but you look at the enthusiasm just specifically in the Virginia Tech fan base and the enthusiasm around the women's basketball program. Obviously, I think peaked last year a little bit in the Final Four and then kind of remained that way throughout most of this season when Virginia Tech brought the core of its team back. Obviously, had to replace some role players, but bringing Georgia Amore and Kayla King and Liz Kitley back into the fold, I think, you know, expectations were understandably very high going into this year. Won the regular season ACC, I think would have had a really good chance to win the ACC tournament if Liz was healthy, because you're facing Notre Dame in a rematch in the semifinal for the first time, or I'm sorry, for the second time in a couple weeks. You know, usually you can game plan a bit better for that for a team that you just saw. But, you know, alas, didn't work out that way because Liz got hurt. What are the expectations for you guys going into this thing? I mean, Ricky, you mentioned, you know, Virginia Tech should beat Marshall with or without Liz. That's a statement I think I definitely agree with. The round of 32 will either be Baylor or the winner of Vanderbilt and Vanderbilt and Columbia in the 5-12 game. Vanderbilt and Columbia is a play-in in the first four. Baylor's going to be heavily favored in that 5-12 game. I would expect if Virginia Tech advances, they'll play Baylor. That'll be not the greatest matchup in the world. I mean, if Virginia Tech gets out of the first weekend without Liz Kitley, that would be really impressive to me.
Yeah,
to get to a sure. Sweet 16. And I don't think any of us are going to indict Kenny Brooks for, you know, if this team can't get out of the first weekend without his All-American center, that's arguably the best player in school history. I don't think anybody's going to indict Kenny Brooks over that, but that would be a tough pill to swallow, I think, just from a situational standpoint, given what the expectations were and just kind of how the chips fell.
Quick tangent. Hunter Couture just hit a three to take a 12-point lead with a few minutes left. So Virginia Tech seems to be slightly pulling away in that one.
Real quick, Ricky, before you continue, Virginia just scored their first points in almost 14 minutes on the in the first four on the men's side. So that was
embarrassing.
That was separated by halftime, by the way. It was like 9:40, I think it was 9:40 or 9:42.
It was like their first bucket in a half hour.
Basically, like I've done several things, including like take the dog out, get ready for this podcast. My wife went to bed. Like a lot of things have happened since UVA scored their last basket.
I'm not the same man I was the last time UVA scored. I'm a changed man.
and Tony Bennett's a changed man too. He's aged by about 15 years on the bench this evening.
I mean, I'm not expecting Virginia Tech to win more than one game without Liz. And even if Liz is if she plays, she's not going to be 100%. So even if she is out there against a team like Baylor, that's probably still a toss-up game, right? I mean, if Liz was healthy, I think Virginia Tech would be rated a little bit higher than a four, maybe like a three. So if Liz was 100%, I would peg them as, you know, several point favorite to beat a team like Baylor, especially at home, right? That's kind of the uniqueness of the women's tournament. But with even with a hindered Liz Kitley, I'm not sure that Virginia Tech is going to be able to make it out of the weekend, but it certainly will increase their chances. I am expecting them to be a little bit better on the offensive end now that they've had some time to kind of game plan this. Andrew brought up a really good point. Liz has been the backbone of this team, her and Georgia, for essentially the last 3 years. And to have to kind of retool your entire offensive mindset in that short amount of time just isn't realistic. And Kenny is pretty creative offensively, and I think he's a really good basketball mind. But now that he's had a little bit more time, I would expect him to be able to figure out a little bit more for the players that he does have, right? Is he able to get Carly Wentz a little bit more involved? Is he able to get Kayla King some more open shots on the perimeter? Is he able to find a way to take some of the ball handling off of Georgia's plate? I mean, if he's able to do that, I think the offense will run a bit smoother than it did against Miami and Notre Dame.
The one thing I want to add, a lot of the freshmen, Karis Baker, Carly Wentzel, Clara Strack, the freshmen that, you know, I think we're going to see play significant minutes, either with or without Kelly, you know, these are players that were in the rotation all year. I do think they'll be better prepared now, right? Because it's been about 3 weeks since Liz Kittley got hurt. I think they'll be better prepared from just like understanding what their role is going to be. Cause I mean, they know, everybody in that room knows whether or not Liz is going to play, or at least they have a pretty good idea of kind of where she stands. So they've been practicing in their respective roles. A lot of them are going to be getting more minutes than they have all year just because Liz isn't on the floor. And I think from that standpoint, Virginia Tech will be better prepared. Like, you know, Kenny Brooks getting, you know, the young players ready to go. You know, I think from a preparation standpoint, it's really important. But also, there's just no replacement for experience, especially in postseason play. Like, this is Liz Kittley's third NCAA tournament. You know, you've been to a Final Four a year ago. Like, for all these freshmen, this is brand new. Like, the lights are pretty bright, and then you have to go out there potentially without, you know, one of your All-Americans, and you have to go into a game now with, you know, without one of your best players, you know, and it's single elimination. It's one and done, and it's the biggest stage in college basketball, and you're facing that for the first time. So you can only get the freshmen so ready to go, right? You really just have to experience it. And, you know, I think from that standpoint, like, Kenny will have him ready, but, you know, we'll see just how comfortable they are in their roles if Liz isn't out there.
Pretty much echoing what you guys said, but just a question as this NIT game rolls on, looking like a Virginia Tech victory here. The March version of November's, does Ricky LaBlue believe in moral victories? Does Ricky LaBlue celebrate NIT victories?
He's eating a cookie.
I was eating a cookie. My fat ass finished it already.
Celebratory?
Celebratory that we didn't get smoked at home by Richmond. No, I'm not celebrating an NIT run here for the men's team. My esteemed former colleague, Chris Coleman at Tech Sideline, I believe once said, I would rather lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament every year than win the NIT. And I tend to agree with him, right? Like, the NIT does not matter. It just doesn't. Especially for a program that's not in its kind of building stage, right? I mean, the NIT meant a lot to Buzz Williams in the early going. And
meant a lot to Kenny on the women's side that 1 year, too.
It did.
Same deal.
And again, I think that was a program that was kind of on the come up, in the sense that Kenny was really starting from scratch over on the women's side. Mike Young didn't start from scratch, boys. Like, Mike Young won an ACC tournament just a couple years ago. So to me, the expectation, the standard is too high to celebrate NIT stuff. So no, you're not going to get any moral victory stuff out of me this month.
I guess we'll just switch over to the men now. Virginia Tech went 18-13. 10-10 in conference play is what they finished up at.
You know what 10-10 is, Mike?
That would be 500.
That's a whole lot of mid.
It's a whole lot of mid
in a very mid
ACC that somehow got five teams into the field. It's actually pretty funny. I tweet about this like in mid January. I thought the ACC was a five bid league. But I wasn't anticipating
NC State for that.
Yes, I can thank NC State, and then the surprise Virginia bid because once Wake Forest and Pitt didn't get in the field, I was like, all right, well, here we are. NC State stole it, obviously.
The selection committee just loves that pack line defense, baby.
Yeah, Colorado State 42, Virginia 25 with 12 minutes to go in the second half. So UVA is getting run out of the gym. 17
Sean Pagula just threw a nice alley-oop to Lynn Kidd.
This is cool. This is we got Virginia
I don't remember
Tech
the
playing.
Last time we did a podcast with a game live happening.
Well, it's not going to be live when
it's live for us.
Yeah. That's what I meant. A game that was live for us. Can you imagine us doing a football game live? Jesus. I'd be blowing a gasket like every 5 minutes.
Should have mic'd ourselves up at the bowl game.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. That would have been, I think all three of us would have ended up in jail.
Yeah.
That was a fun experience.
I said some stuff. I want to say I said some stuff I regret, because I don't know that that's necessarily true.
I don't think we regretted any of it. It was just...
But I said some stuff, for sure.
I just to clarify, like, we didn't say any stuff that would, like, get us canceled.
No.
But we said a bunch of
we
stuff.
We definitely made
just
ourselves...
make our listeners lose whatever respect they have left for us.
Yes.
Definitely made ourselves look like jackasses, for sure.
Yeah.
Mostly me.
Well... Not just you. I mean, I stood in a line.
I don't know, man. Mike was.
I was pretty lit up.
I mean, yeah, Andrew was having a great time, but Mike was also. So was Scott.
Scott. I mean, Scott disappeared the entire second half. Scott's gonna listen to this and crack up. I mean, Scott was gone not the entire second half, but he was gone like the entire third quarter. His dad was like, "Where is he?" I'm like, I have no idea.
Like, and where is there to go? It is absolutely pouring rain.
Yeah,
like, is he going to watch this on the little hill or whatever that they have? Because that's not a good idea.
And he can correct the record on this, but I'm pretty sure he was just going to try to find beer, which was, you know, fair play. But I mean,
a noble effort.
I mean, our entire side of the stadium just ran out, so fair play. I don't know if he ever got that beer. I can't remember. I was drunk.
If he did, he didn't need it. If he didn't, he didn't need it.
That's right. Correct. We drank plenty for everybody at the tailgate. All right. So Virginia Tech finished 10-10. They were 18-13 in league play for the regular season. Virginia Tech lost in the ACC. They lost on Wednesday, second round, to Florida State in a game that was pretty competitive in the first half. Virginia Tech didn't shoot it great. And then Florida State pulled away in the second half. Virginia Tech's turnovers really came back to bite them, which has been really an issue with this team all year. Mike Young historically has not had a lot of high turnover rate teams, and this was one of his worst teams in terms of turning the basketball over. I think you can certainly attribute a lot of that to just the depth issues that they had this year. I mean, so where are we at? I mean, this year wasn't good enough. I think it got off on the wrong foot with Rodney Rice departing, right? You immediately lose any depth you had at point guard. Obviously, Mike Young wasn't comfortable putting Jaden Young and Brandon Recksteiner out there more than he had to. Maybe that's a philosophy switch that needs to happen, especially with, you know, the way that Virginia Tech, I think, is going to struggle to retain talent. Like, as long as, you know, I think football should always be the priority at Virginia Tech. I don't think it's any secret where I stand there. But I think the expectations right now for the men's basketball program are at a Buzz Williams level, and I don't think Virginia Tech is investing on the NIL side in the way that would kind of mirror that kind of recruiting. My whole take on this is, like, Buzz Williams, his ability to – first of all, it was two different eras, right? You didn't have the transfer portal, the automatic eligibility. NIL was not present at the time. Not to say players didn't get paid. We all know how this operation works, but it was just different, right? The college sports landscape was in a different spot 5 or 6 years ago than it is right now. I think expectations are at a Buzz Williams level, and I think Mike Young inherited that, and I think that's obvious. You know, it's good to inherit those types of expectations. I think the problem now is Mike Young's recruiting, but he's not retaining talent. I think that's been apparent now for a couple years. I am a little bit concerned about, you know, what's going to happen with this roster in the offseason in terms of retaining a guy like Sean Padula. That's a concern I have. He's going to be a senior next year. I would not surprise me if he entertained something closer to home in the state of Oklahoma. That wouldn't shock me. That would, I think, be scary hours for the men's team if that happens, because
might be an understatement.
Padula's a all ACC type player, and I think to lose him would be pretty catastrophic. But yeah, I mean, this is a talent retention issue. And I think Mike Young, from a philosophical standpoint, just with the state of college basketball, I think he's going to have to look in the mirror in the offseason and think about whether or not he needs to change his philosophy in terms of playing younger guys earlier. We saw it help Virginia Tech in their tournament run a couple of years ago, playing Darius Max more, playing a young Sean Padula more. That really helped Virginia Tech's depth issues with that team and ultimately helped a guy like Storm Murphy realize his potential because he didn't have to play as many minutes. Yeah. He was more effective in the minutes he was playing. So I know I just kind of spewed a lot there, but I'm just kind of curious, like, high level, what you guys are thinking. We can kind of take the conversation wherever we want from there.
Well,
good win, by the way. Virginia Tech 74, Richmond 58. Moving on to the second round of the NIT. Good win.
Yeah, way to rebound after a really slow start offensively for Virginia Tech.
The champagne bottles are coming out of the Blue House.
Yeah, we're going to be partying all night. Look, this team was kind of doomed from the start. It is really difficult to have success when you have one primary ball, or when you have one competent ball handler, right? We talked about this last year. We talked about it this year. Sean Padula was asked to do way too much. And Mike, you bring up a very sad but realistic point, in the sense that Sean Padula is coming back next year without Hunter Couture. No idea what the transfer portal may look like. Virginia Tech is going to have to hit on that, and I want to talk about that point specifically later on. Not a ton of returning talent on this team that has a track record of production. I mean, outside of Lynn Kidd and, I guess, to an extent, Tyler Nickel, there's not a lot you're coming back with.
MJ, I guess, too.
Yeah. Does Sean want to be a part of that again? I mean, what's going to change? I don't know. Mike Young's going to have to answer that question. I think that's an extremely important question. But to kind of hammer home that transfer point, guys, who were two of the most important players in the first few years of the Mike Young era?
Mutz and Aluma.
Bingo. Were they guys that Mike Young signed at Virginia Tech early on? No, they were transfers, right? Justin Mutz was a kind of a unknown quantity from Delaware, I believe, who we weren't really sure what we were going to get out of him. Aluma was putting up numbers at Wofford, but you had no idea if he was going to be able to do that. Both of those guys were absolutely critical players for this program. Same thing goes for Grant Basile, right? I was kind of harsh on Basile at times last season, and I still think that, you know, a lot of it was warranted, but when you go back and look at it, Basile played such a huge role on this team last year. And even that wasn't enough. But in this day and age, especially if you're not going to retain the talent, the guys like Adarius Maddox or Rodney Rice, you're going to have to hit on the transfers. And then this year, Mike Young just didn't do that. Robbie Barron was not the guy that everyone thought he was going to be, or our expectations were out of line. I tend to think it's a little bit of both. Robbie didn't show any growth this year playing under Mike Young, and I think people were expecting a little bit too much of him. He was never going to be KB Aluma. He was never going to be Grant Basile. And thus, Virginia Tech really never replaced Grant Basile from last year. And, you know, Lynn Kidd was kind of a welcome
surprise in the sense that Lynn really got comfortable in his limited offensive role and you know, seemed to be improving a lot on that end in the early portion of the year. And, you know, if you go by the kind of the advanced metrics, Lynn was one of the most efficient players on the team this year. So he deserves credit for that. But the offensive creativity is not Lynn's game. And that's okay, but you've got to have other guys on the roster and in the lineup that can do that. And Virginia Tech just didn't have it outside of Sean Padula. So that was what doomed this team from the start, despite the really poor defense, I think, all year. That they were never really a good defensive team this year. You pair that up with inefficient offense and too many streaks of cold shooting, and you're going to end up with a really streaky or hot and cold team like Virginia Tech was.
The way I look at it, and I agree with everything that you just mentioned, Ricky, that the one thing that I think is really important to note is Virginia Tech goes from basically Basile to basically the surge of Lynn Kidd's offensive game. And I use that being like almost like a relative term because because it really depended on the matchup. Like his best offense is rim running. Not to say he wasn't effective. I mean, you mentioned his efficiency.
He was effective in that role.
He was effective in that role, but it wasn't something that was going to necessarily play in every single game that Virginia Tech played, right? It was going to be very matchup dependent. You know, if Virginia Tech was facing a team that, you know, didn't have a great post presence, then Lynn Kidd was going to have a big night. He was going to go for, you know, 16 and 10 or, you know, 18 and 8 or something. He was going to have a good night. And he was going to be kind of that third scorer, that second, that 2A, 2B, whatever, second or third scorer that Virginia Tech needed. The issue is that Grant Basile, towards the end of last year, turned into a consistent 15 to 20 point scorer every night in the second half of ACC play. He was really reliable. When Virginia Tech really needed that guy to emerge offensively, I mean, you guys know this, Hunter Couture was hurt for most of conference play last year. And Virginia Tech was really searching for answers outside of Padula. Rodney Rice was, you know, a true freshman, and he wasn't healthy. Then he played a handful of games down the stretch. Hunter Couture came back. It was too late. You know, it was too late to really make a run. It just feels like that's been the problem for a couple years, where, like, Virginia Tech then coming into this year, you don't have Rodney Rice from the start because he decides he's going to leave. Okay, right? That's his prerogative. That's fine. But Virginia Tech now ran into the same issue they had last year before even playing a game. They didn't have a true backup to spell Sean Padula, and you automatically just put more on his plate. Was Sean Padula a better player overall this year than last year? I think so. I think he was better offensively. I think he certainly made some strides defensively, bigger, stronger. He was very good this year. But again, his usage rate was absurd, and he ran into a stretch where every team in the conference knows what Hunter Couture is, and they're just going to blanket him. And he's best as a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter anyway.
Yep.
So if teams are blanketing him, and Virginia Tech's got no real post presence on a consistent basis, right? Outside, you know, Lynn Kidd, it's every other game, right? Just matchup dependent. Virginia Tech's just inherently going to be limited offensively because they never truly replaced Basile. They replaced half of Basile's production, in my opinion, with Lynn Kidd. Because even on Lynn Kidd's like tough nights, he was going to give you like 6 to 8 points. Lynn Kidd had a good year, but you never fully replaced Grant Basile. And then you didn't replace Justin Mutz either. Like Mutz was on this team last year and he left. You didn't really replace that. You didn't replace his defense and his rebounding. You know, Robbie Barron was supposed to be that guy. He really didn't. He wasn't that guy. He didn't. Nope. You know, he comes in from Northwestern. I think the expectation was that he would kind of be the Lynn Kidd, like 8 and 6 guy. And then, you know, Lynn Kidd would emerge offensively. And then if you had that consistently, you could piece together a front court. And Barron never emerged as that guy. Malajuel Petit.
I was going to say, and Petit kind of, I guess, jumped him in the rotation in a sense, because Petit, while not really offensively gifted was a little bit better defensively and a little bit better on the glass.
Yeah, so even with Barron starting, like, Petit got huge minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really turned into a front court where you were really reliant upon Lynn Kidd and Malajuel Petit. But really, in reality, it's Petit, it's Barron, and it's Kidd, and you're trying to replace Basile and Mutz, and it just did not happen. Like, it didn't happen. And then you still had the backcourt issue where you had no true backup to Sean Padula. And everybody in the conference, I mean, Hunter Couture scored his 1,500th point tonight in this NIT win. Everybody in the conference knows what Hunter Couture is, one of the best shooters in school history. Flat out, one of the best shooters. I mean, we're not going to sit here and argue about that. But everybody in the conference knows what he is. So it's tough, man. I think that, you know, it was pretty apparent the roster is going to get a reset because you're going to lose Couture. And Robbie Barron's out the door. He's out of eligibility. Petit's out of eligibility. Lynn Kidd can come back. I'm interested to see if he does. He's still got a COVID year. I think it would be good if he did.
I agree.
You know, and MJ Collins, I think, you know, defensively really good. I think offensively definitely started to make strides in the second half of the conference schedule. He's starting to get more comfortable. I mean, Ricky, the thing about MJ Collins is, like, he was a high three-star. And I think he's a guy that Virginia Tech fans, like, want to rely upon so bad offensively. They want to get, like, that offensive firepower from Collins. And he is just going to be a developmental, like a Mike Young developmental player. And I think he has a chance to be really good by the time he's a senior. And I think he'll be good next year. And I think we're seeing the glimpses offensively of what Mike Young always talks about. And then you circle back to Tyler Nickel. And
I was going to say, I think that that's where you're... If you're going to hope to get substantial increase in offensive production, I think that Nickel is the one to hope that for.
The jump. Game. Yeah.
He's got the stroke. He can shoot it from outside. Need to see a little bit more from him off the dribble, I think. And that's something that this team is really missing. I think that you got to have people that can put the ball on the floor and find ways to create. And under Buzz Williams, Virginia Tech had that in spades, right? We talked about how that team was so short and they had so many problems with height issues in the front court, but they were really good at breaking you down off the dribble, getting the ball into the paint. We heard the term paint touches all the time, and they were able to create that way. And Virginia Tech needs a little bit more of that, I think, going into next year. That they need to find a way to get someone who, you know, hopefully will be able to play opposite Sean Padula and will be able to break some guys down.
I mean, the one thing I'll add is I remember it was something that we initially learned upon, like, the arrival of Mike Young, was that his offense was going to be something that is very complex, takes players a long time to kind of develop within, which is something that plays into his philosophy of developing the young guys until he feels like they're ready to go. Well, now, unfortunately, being Mike Young, you're in a situation where, you know, Couture is gone, potentially Padula could be gone. And are you going to fill those gaps in the transfer portal? Because that's where you end up with a situation where are those guys going to be operating at their full potential in a singular year in the program, knowing what you know about the offense and how you have to develop into it? Why would someone of a high caliber want to transfer into Virginia Tech? Who were the best players of the Mike Young era? Dudes that played for him at Wofford before, or Hunter Couture, who played for him for 5 years within the system? That's what happens when you hit off the bat, but you can't retain the big name talents that you get out of high school. You end up in this situation right now, which I'm not saying that Mike Young's on the hottest seat in the world, but a very poor showing next year, and those conversations could get serious. So it'll be really interesting to see how they play everything come the offseason.
What's the commitment and I guess the We're going to try to get somebody from Triumph on here to talk about this and see how much they spill.
We've asked, by the way, for those that are listening, we have asked multiple people, you know, who would be the best person for this. So that's certainly something on our radar.
Yeah, we're working on this, but we basically, what we want answered, and I don't know if they'll tell us flat out, at least on the recording, right?
Yeah.
There's so much we can, we'll tell you what we can, right? But what I want to know is, what's Virginia Tech's commitment to men's basketball, right? I think it's easier. The NIL game on the women's side is just different. It's tough to retain talent right now on the men's side. It's tough.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're seeing it across the sport. I mean, we're talking, you know, today on Tuesday, the transfer portal opened yesterday for men's basketball. There were like hundreds of players in it already. And, you know, I think, you know, we can have a whole discussion whether or not the transfer portal for men's basketball should be opening the week of the NIT and the NCAA tournament. We can have that discussion. I think it's insane. I think it's hard enough to build a roster without that happening. I have the same complaints about college football.
It's absolutely absurd.
Crazy. But
just like the transfer portal opening, like before you even finish the recruiting class and you're
right,
doing early signing day on the football side.
Yeah, it's drinking from a fire hose. But the I want to know what the commitment is to men's basketball, right? Because I think, you know, Mike Young bringing in talent is one thing, and he's done that at a comparable clip to Buzz Williams in terms of just like bringing recruits into the program. He's doing that, but the retention of talent has not been there with the top guys. Now, has Mike Young developed talent that stayed in the program? Yeah, he's done that. If a player has stayed in the program for multiple years, the player has developed into being a pretty good and reliable piece of the puzzle. He's done that. There are a handful of exceptions. I think the biggest one is probably Darius Maddox, you know, because he had been in school a couple of years, you know, he'd been at Virginia Tech a couple of years, and then transferred out. All the other guys who transferred out have really just been at Virginia Tech a year, like Darren Buchanan didn't even play. In Blacksburg, he redshirted and then he left.
Bama Seal,
yeah, he's kind of making his tour around college basketball. Just had a very nice year for VCU. But you know, these guys have left, and you know, we'll see what happens with Rodney Rice. But the top recruits have left, and you know, with varying results elsewhere. But the bigger point is I don't care what they've done elsewhere. I care about this program and what they weren't able to accomplish in Blacksburg. You know, I don't necessarily care that Darius Maddox went to George Mason and averaged like, you know, whatever it was, 12 points a game or something like that is what it was in January. I don't know what he finished with. Like, I don't care about that. I care that he wasn't doing that in Blacksburg, that he didn't end up averaging 12 points per game this year for Virginia Tech. Like, that's ultimately the issue. It's not if they did or didn't pan out elsewhere. It's that they didn't pan out here and they weren't in the program long enough. Because when Mike Young keeps his guys in the program, he develops them. They develop into good basketball players when they're around long enough. And that's something I can rely on Mike Young for, is that if a player is going to be here, he's going to be developed into a good player and a good reliable piece of the puzzle. He's proven that he can do that. The question is whether or not these players now in the transfer portal era and the NIL era and kind of like the, I hate when people call it like the instant gratification era, because I don't think that's fair, especially in college basketball. Like, you can find playing time elsewhere pretty quickly. There's 300 Division I basketball schools. You can go start at Division I level right away if you want to. You just got to find the right place. And I don't know. I mean, I think the retention piece is a huge part of it. I think some of that is within Mike Young's control from a philosophical standpoint. Maybe some questions he's going to ask himself now. Like, the game has changed a bit in that regard. Like, do I need to start playing these younger guys earlier? But by the same token, like, you know, do I have enough support from an infrastructure standpoint for the men's basketball program that, you know, I can retain some of these high level players I'm recruiting? That's also a question that needs to be answered just within the program that I think to a degree is within Mike Young's control, but within a degree is not. So I think those are questions that need to be asked in the offseason. I think the entire program needs to kind of take a look in the mirror and decide how important they want men's basketball to be here.
Yeah, and maybe part of it is Mike Young needs to take a bit of a look in the mirror and maybe self-evaluate what's gone wrong over the last 2 years and why the team hasn't made the tournament. And, you know, if we're being quite honest, it's the last 3 years, the program has not safely been in the NCAA tournament. And while Mike obviously, and, you know, we can't say this enough, and some people forget it and some people cling to it way too much, but like Mike Young did win an ACC tournament, and that is a noteworthy accomplishment and something that should not be overlooked. But the whole point is about what have you done for me lately, and where are we going, right? And Virginia Tech's not trending up on this in this program at the moment. They kind of treaded water this year, which is not good enough, right? And, you know, part of it is doing more with what you have, and part of it is getting more resources. So it's going to be kind of all hands on deck, I think, this offseason from an administration perspective of, you know, we've seen what looks to be a turnaround on the football side, and we're starting to make progress there. Kenny has elevated the women's team. I think they're probably going to take a step back next year, but, you know, he's elevated the women's program to national relevance. How do we then get the basketball team, you know, back headed towards that direction, the men's team? That's something that Witt's going to have to figure out. And then for Mike, I think it's all about, can you have a net positive, a net gain in talent this offseason through the portal? It's really hard to have a net gain in the portal these days. And for a team like Virginia Tech that's in need of talent in some key positions, it's really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, to your exact point, Ricky, like, not a lot of teams make the NCAA tournament every single year. I mean, you remember when Virginia Tech had their streak.
Yeah.
We were like sixth in the country with five in a row, which didn't even count because we wouldn't have made the tournament the year that it got canceled. So I'm not going to declare crisis because we've missed a couple in a row. He's made two. He's won an ACC tournament. That type of stuff holds weight, especially at a place like Virginia Tech. But that being said, you like to look at the general direction of things. And more importantly, when the general direction of things has obviously declined, like they made the NCAA tournament twice. Now they have not made it twice. Program certainly hasn't bottomed out.
No.
But you want to look at what's coming down the pipe. Right.
We're a long way from James Johnson, thank God.
Yeah, we're a long way from James Johnson.
I was in school for that. That was something. I was sitting two rows. I was sitting sideline, like two rows from the floor,
watching Devin Wilson take 22 shots a game.
Outside of like, yeah, well, yes, and outside of like, you know, when Duke, Carolina, or UVA were in town, I could watch whatever ACC game I wanted to, two rows from the floor, just like walking in to the arena. We're a long ways from that. So, yeah. You know,
Mike, were you there? You probably were both there because we were all in school at the same time. First year of buzz. So team is still very bad.
Yeah.
Soon to be national champions. Duke comes in. Tech takes them to overtime.
Yep.
That was exciting. That was a great game.
And that was a game. That's a game. You should have won.
Should have won for sure. Satchel Pierce.
That might have been the
Satchel Pierce.
The name.
That might have been the first moment, I think, where I thought that Buzz was legit.
I ate it all up from the moment he started talking. I drank every ounce of the Kool-Aid.
He's a talker, that's for damn sure.
It ran its course, especially as I got older and
yeah,
more involved in student media. But I mean, at that point, the team was
firing on all cylinders. So it was just a matter of, you know, how many hours after we leave does he announce, or after we lose, does he announce that he's leaving with the covered bear? But that's neither here nor there.
And we had basically,
either way, to the Mike Young point, just like, I want nothing more than for Mike Young to succeed, because, you know, my friends always joke like, oh, he's from Southwest Virginia and likes to drink beer. Like, is that a qualifier? Like, that alone doesn't qualify you, but it'd be cool if that's what the Virginia Tech basketball coach is. A guy from Southwest Virginia who loves to be here and, you know, acts like an everyman.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Like, I see that on social media. It's like, well, if he wasn't from Southwest Virginia, we would have fired him already. And I'm like, this is so stupid. Like, don't you want your coach to be there? Like, aren't we sick of having Virginia Tech be treated as not a destination job? Like, oh, you know, people talk about the football program. Oh, is this like a stepping stone job for Brent Pry, or is this like his destination? You know, was this a stepping stone for Buzz Williams? Yeah, it was a stepping stone for Buzz Williams. Oh, bummer. Now this guy wants to be here. We want to run him out of town because the team went 500. And oh, if, you know, he wasn't from Southwest Virginia, we would have fired him already. First of all, that's crazy. We wouldn't, because I lived through the James Johnson era, and that wasn't as far away from right now as some people like to pretend it is. I mean, that's within the last decade, guys. Like, this isn't like this wasn't like ancient history where Virginia Tech was so bad that they were failing to win 10 games a season. They were winning two conference games a year. Like, what? We got to cool the Jets a little bit. You know, we got to cool the Jets. Are there reasons to be concerned or to go into the offseason, you know, needing improvements to the program? Absolutely. Virginia Tech treading water and missing NCAA tournaments year over year, is that going to be an acceptable thing for Whit Babcock? No, it's not. So there's going to need to be improvement. I think it's, Ricky, you said all hands on deck. I think that's exactly right. It's going to be, look at the NIL, look at across, you know, the rest of the sports at Virginia Tech. How seriously do we want to take men's basketball? Football is always going to be number one. In my opinion, Virginia Tech should not sacrifice any football resources for basketball. They should not do that. This is a football school through and through. We all know that football pays the bills at every institution that is serious about it. And I know the Tim Sands joke, oh, Virginia Tech's a basketball school, has become like a meme on Virginia Tech social media. I get all that. Virginia Tech is and always will be a football school. When the football program is firing on all cylinders, there is nothing like it. And Virginia Tech should never, ever sacrifice, and this is going to be tough for the diehard basketball fans to hear, Virginia Tech should never sacrifice any resources on the football side for basketball. That doesn't mean that you don't find a way to improve things from an operating standpoint or an NIL standpoint for the basketball programs. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying leave it alone, leave it to die.
It's not a zero-sum game.
Right. It's not robbing Peter to pay Paul, I guess is all I'm saying. Like, don't take from football to basketball's benefit. I'm pouring all my resources into football, and then also let's figure out what to do about the basketball programs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, but to that degree, right, like, it's not necessarily that Virginia Tech's flying blind, but the emergence of NIL in the overall sports space collegiately is relatively new, right? Like, conversations that we're having in football this past offseason about, you know, very publicly collecting the money to keep guys around, like, those weren't conversations that we were having in year three of this podcast. Podcast is like 5 years old.
Right.
So on the basketball side, this is a development that has come in since Mike Young, you know, took over and really has grown into what it is right now and is ever developing, even since the ACC tournament win 2 years ago last week. So what we know right now is that what's happening to Virginia Tech on the NIL front, since it's really come to the forefront, has not been a net victory for Virginia Tech in the way that it's been a net victory for some other schools. And that includes both retaining and bringing in new talent to supplement. So whatever the approach is, you know, needs to be seriously reconsidered, because right now today, just judging on the past performance there, I can't say that I have serene confidence that Virginia Tech is going to be able to put together a roster that come October, when we're doing our short preview episode in the middle of football season, where hopefully Virginia Tech's ranked like number 13. And it's like, who cares? Why are we even doing this? But that any of us are going to be saying, like, NCAA tournament, that seems like a lock. Right? At best, I feel like we could go in saying kind of the same thing that we were saying in the last two seasons, which is, could go one way, very well could be, you know, a seeded team in the NIT.
All right, guys, that was pretty thorough. Got anything else?
No. Rate, review, subscribe. Thanks for listening to another off-season episode. We'll be recording a bit more frequently as spring practice is starting. I am going to Blacksburg for a spring game next month. I don't know about you guys, but I'll be there.
I'm a hard maybe on spring game.
Hard maybe. Nice. I will not be there. Got some stuff, schedule stuff on my end. Having a family is difficult. Well, I mean,
also very rewarding, I'm sure.
I want, yes, I phrased that poorly. I meant like strictly from a scheduling standpoint.
If Scott makes it to the end of the podcast, he's going to be very upset with you.
Some of my life's best work revolves around raising my kid. So I want to make that clear. But
yes,
maybe I should just quit while I'm ahead. Just kidding. Keep my mouth shut now. Rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back to talk about spring practice. Virginia Tech kicked off spring practice on Friday. They are, I guess, three or four practices in. So there's stuff to talk about there. We'll be back to speak about that, I don't know, about a week. So yeah, be on the lookout for that.
We'll recap the women's, you know, weekend, see how they do, and then we'll go ahead and dive into football.
Hopefully we're talking about a women's Sweet 16 appearance. We'll see what happens.
We also might have to start talking about the baseball program, boys.
Because they are hitting a metric 1,000 home runs.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they're ranked right now.
Yeah, they're good. They're real good. The pitching was supposed to be a weakness, and it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. And Virginia Tech is doing nothing but hitting home runs. So baseball program is pretty exciting right now. We might get into that as well. Guys, we'll talk next week. Until then, go Hokies.